My name is Ray Park. You may know me as playing Darth Maul in the Phantom Menace, Clone Wars, and also Solo at Star Wars Story. You're listening to Star Wars Stuff Podcast, The Force is Strong with You All. And remember, Sith Walk.
Hey, this is Dominic Pace, who plays Gecko the Bounty Hunter from The Mandalorian, letting you all know you are listening to the Star Wars Stuff Podcast. Wishing everybody all the best. May the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you!
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Star Wars Stuff Podcast, where we talk all things Star Wars. My name is Colin.
I'm Hannah.
And I'm Hunter.
And we're here to talk about the tragedy of Doth Jar Jar, because Jar Jar Binks is coming back as a Sith Lord, which is pretty sick. And then we've also got the Tales of the Empire. We are definitely going to talk about our favorite parts. And then we have a new trailer for Acolyte. But first, let's talk about how great our May 4th was, because everyone in our group was just doing different things. So, Yeah. How was your guys' trip?
Fantastic, honestly.
Yeah, it was great. So I guess to obviously, you know, Colin, but people listening, Hannah and I went out to the Anaheim area and spent that whole May 4th weekend with Christian and his girlfriend Sai and some other friends out there. So we did the Disney Star Wars night. We went and saw the Phantom Menace, both totally awesome ways to spend our evenings. And then just did some other stuff around the area too. Oh, and I guess big one that I just totally forgot to mention, on Saturday, I got to meet Ahmed Best dressed as Jar Jar Binks, which was pretty sweet. I did debut my Jar Jar costume out there, which was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people really loved seeing it on Star Wars night. Like, people were loving it. And there was also someone dressed as, like, a green screen Jar Jar.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was awesome. And then you also got to see the walking droids. How was that?
Oh, my gosh.
Dude.
I was so in love with them.
I almost started crying.
They're
so cute. Horrible thing. Like, Hannah does this a lot. Like, she sees like a hole on the side of the road and she's like, oh, it's so cute. And this is like surprise. That's never happened to me before until I saw that droid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He was like, is this how you feel when you see cute babies? It's like, yes, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think the whole process is fascinating too. So, I mean, you probably asked the cast member like so many questions, right? Like, of what you
well,
saw
no, because I know they're not going to be able to answer them. Like, they won't break their character.
Yeah.
Any answer they give you is going to be an in-universe answer.
Yes.
So I was just vibing with the droid, just watching him dance and do his little hop thing. And
yeah.
His little hop is the best, because he like winds up and he's like, really, you can see he's like, all right, I can do this. And then he like hops, but his feet like don't leave the ground.
Yeah, he gets maybe an
That's
it's
so
the cutest
cute.
Thing ever.
That's but, awesome.
I mean, from a technical perspective, they're incredibly impressive. Amazing. I mean, when they designed Galaxy's Edge, they didn't design it for the intent to have bipedal robots walking around, and uneven terrain like that is a big difficult thing. I mean, it could be worse, obviously, but there's still like there's little pits in the ground and like tracks and stuff rolling around from like theoretical droids. Like, that's how they design the story, you know. And the way that those droids handle the uneven terrain and are able to move and shift around no problem, adjust themselves if they stumble a little bit, and then the way that they move and then still account for that and like look at people and interact with the crowd is just fantastic. It's deep immersion. It's honestly like seeing those droids was the second most immersive Star Wars thing that I have ever experienced behind Star Cruiser.
Yeah.
Which really saying it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I really hope that makes it over to Hollywood Studios over there one day, because I know for a bit, at least when I was working over at Batuu, we like kept seeing, look, here is Boba Fett, here's Ahsoka, here's this, and we're all just like, yeah. So yeah, so hopefully they get that experience. Yeah.
Yeah, I think part of the reason, at least the other costume characters, they brought them to West earlier is because it's much more of a locals park out there, and they wanted something to keep bringing the locals back in. I think for these droids, though, it genuinely is more of they're still in the testing stage for them. They walk around with that sign, you know, it says like droid testing in progress or whatever. And I think that's totally true. You guys have probably seen it too. And a lot of people listening have probably seen it, but there's photos going around and a couple like videos on Instagram stuff of the droids actually failing, like they lose power or something. They're walking around and they just kind of collapse, which is terrifying and very sad. But it is like as big of a technical feat as it is to get these droids to go out and be as interactive as they are. There's a lot that they need to like test and make sure that they're going to be good before they implement those in Disney World, I'm sure. And there's, sorry, I'm kind of geeking out about the droids here.
No, no, dude, it's fine, man. Go ahead.
So, like, when they're out there, there's when we were there, there was only the green droid out. And with the single droid, they have the main handler guy, one or two people there who are just kind of like watching, directing the crowd. And then for every droid, there's someone out there with a controller, and the droids are actually controlled with the Steam Deck that runs off of a custom software that they port onto those. And then on that screen, there's basically diagnostics for the droid, and then override controls, and then what they call like hero actions. So the dance or the jump and that kind of thing. So like they can tell the droid to do that. And then the operator is there just in case they have to override them or something. And make them like not run over a child or something. They're still keeping track of all of that. And I don't know if that would ever go away, but it's very clear that they're still getting the hang of it. Not in a bad way. I don't mean that, but like they just kind of need to watch and get used to this new type of experience that they're going to release into the parks.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I hope with everything that happened with Star Cruiser, like of just how many great things they had over there, I really hope that eventually they like carry that stuff into the actual park of where they would have actual aliens walking around.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust, Rose, and I think a little fear. Really? But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Of where they would have, like, a Rodian of just kind of walking through. I think it would be so cool. And then even if they had, you know, someone, you know, off in the distance where they would be controlling an R2 unit just going by.
Yeah.
I'm just going through.
We did actually see the R2 out. The land when we were out there, which was neat.
Yeah, because if that doesn't really happen, like of having R2 out normally doesn't happen unless it's like Star Wars night or something.
Right.
Yeah. Because I remember during a Cats member night, they actually had Chewie and the actual Falcon, like over at Smokers running. Yeah. That's and he was just kind of hanging out over at the chess table and stuff. And, you know, I was just like, oh my God, Chewie. And then I was like, oh yeah, it's Chewie. But yeah, like the whole thing was cool. But yeah, so yeah, I would love to see more immersive experiences like that. Yeah. How was the Star Tours mission? Because I assumed you guys did that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
I totally only did it once, but it was great. Because the one we got on, we were sitting there, and then we had to get up and like move to a different.
The ride vehicle broke down. Like as soon as we sat down, there was something with the safety on the exit doors that they weren't.
Closing.
They weren't given the green light, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, shoot. Darn.
But it was awesome.
Yeah, it was cool. We got the we got the Cassian hologram, and then we got the Purrgil at the end.
Yeah.
Which was very, very cool.
The Purrgil mission was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man. Yeah. I can't wait to see that. But it was also the weekend of the 25th anniversary of the Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
That was so cool to see. Let's see. I started it out by seeing the Phantom Menace on Thursday night at midnight, and then I woke up and I saw the Phantom Menace again. I saw it with my twin sister, I saw it with my aunt who actually got me into Star Wars, and then I saw it with Brooke and then my friend Noah. And it's so cool to see something like that has been part of your childhood, you know, for so long, and then you're seeing it on the big screen. But not only that, I love seeing movies like that with a crowd, and I know not everyone does,
yeah,
but it was one moment that made me think of you, Hunter, because as soon as Jar Jar Binks popped up on screen, this kid that was maybe like 3 or 4 years old just screamed Jar Jar, and just the entire theater.
I was the only one in the theater, so people would cheer like when Qui-Gon showed up or when R2 first showed up, and then when Jar Jar first showed up, I was like, "Woo!" And it was just me.
So that was actually me during the Return of the Jedi anniversary screening when Max Rebo showed up, and I was like the only one that went like, "Yeah!" And then everyone in my row, I couldn't see everyone, but I could tell they were all glaring at me, and then it was people I knew. Yeah, so it was so funny, but yeah, no. Seeing that on the big screen was so cool, and I just love how much love that the prequels have gotten since then. What's up, Christian? But yeah, so it was an absolute blast, and that's all right. And then on May 4th, we actually went to a Star Wars concert, and that was really cool. Because we were doing stuff for the 501st and the Rebel Legion, and then afterwards Craig, our friend Craig Hobbs, and my wife Brooke all went to go see it. And not only did they play like the score for all the main 9 films, but they played music from Solo, Obi-Wan, and Rogue One, and that was really
nice.
Yeah, I was very, very excited because I've only heard a couple of those themes live, so the fact that, you know, we got to add ones that I've never really heard before live was pretty cool. But overall, Star Wars Day was great. It was a great time, and it seems like every weekend this week of this month is like I'm dressing up in some type of costume, so because there is so many events coming up. But yeah, no, it was a blast. It was an absolute blast. Christian, how was your May 4th?
I had a great May 4th. Leading up to it, we spent the day in Disneyland. Then we did Star Wars Night. And then May 3rd, we got to go watch The Phantom Menace. It was awesome. It's the only prequel I never got to see on the big screen because I was 3 when it came out. And now that I got to watch it, I'm like, oh, I need every prequel back now in the theaters.
I think I said this to probably both you, Hannah, and Christian, when we got out of the showing, I didn't think about it going in, but when I got out, it kind of hit me that we have like never seen, or like me personally, like I have never seen a prequel lightsaber duel on the big screen. I take that back. I did see the Phantom Menace in 3D when it came out.
Yeah, yeah, I remember so that.
And I guess the closest thing would have been the Praetorian Guard duel in The Last Jedi. But like, it's not quite the same as lightsaber on lightsaber and the duel of the fates. Like, seeing that on screen, because it's different in the different eras of Star Wars, you know, was so cool to get that again.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So here's the thing, though. Next year marks the 20th anniversary of Revenge of the Sith. I would be shocked if it was not released into theaters like The Phantom Menace was, because that movie is so loved by fans, like, you know, over 100%. So I would be shocked if that didn't hit theaters.
I could see them not doing it just because that would mean they would be skipping Attack of the Clones.
Yeah.
Attack of the Clones doesn't have a even year anniversary coming up.
I could see them doing it, but I could also see them waiting for the 25th of each.
Yeah.
But because that Disney does want to make money. So,
and this is something that I mentioned in the Star Wars channel on my work Slack, and it gained a lot of traction from the 1,600 people that are actively on it every day. But it was getting to watch The Phantom Menace on the big screen has just re-solidified, like, my opinion and a lot of other people's opinions that Star Wars needs to come back to the big screen as much as possible. And if that means we see less movies and we see less TV shows and there's longer periods between movies, but we get more movies, I am completely okay with
that. Yeah, that would be great. Mm-hmm. People talk about Marvel fatigue, and that's a real thing. Mm-hmm. I don't really care about Marvel anymore, which I can't believe that I say that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It feels wrong to say it.
Yeah. Like, I was at all the initial, like, Thursday night premieres for everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now it's just like, whatever.
Yeah. And again, I really don't think that they'll ever get traction like that ever again. Like, of just the excitement revolving around those, you know, movies, and then leading to the actual Endgame, you know, Avengers Endgame. Leading up to that, we'll probably never see anything like that again. And the issue to me is it feels like they're trying to recapture that and just do it so soon when it's like, you guys got to build things up. And I think Deadpool and Wolverine is going to change that. But
I hope
this is all Star Wars stuff. So. Yeah, but
that one actually has me excited to go to the theater Marvel again.
And I'm hoping with Acolyte and Skeleton Crew that getting a live action Star Wars helps bring back that, like, hey, let's take these smaller stories and, like, yes, have anthology TV series or whatever, like one-off seasons, but then let's tell actual Star Wars stories on the big screen again.
The thing with Skeleton Crew too is we actually have a kind of release date, which is going to be in December around Christmas time.
Holiday.
Because of John Watts was recently at a convention and he just kind of said that, you know, prepare for Skeleton Crew this holiday season in December. So it sounds like we are getting it, which is pretty exciting. Because of ever since I saw the trailer at Celebration, I was like, that is like classic practical effects, and the fact that Phil Tippett is also involved in it in some way too is just like
Phil Tippett's been involved in seasons of The Mandalorian as well, but if he's involved with this series as a whole, it's obviously going to have a different feel to it. And I think people really appreciated the production value in Andor visually. There was a lot of people like, oh, yeah, that did feel different because there was significantly less use of the volume. And I think that you're going to feel that difference in Skeleton Crew. And this isn't at all to say that, like, The Mandalorian or The Ahsoka Show don't have a high production value, because they're obviously incredibly well made. but there is a slightly different feel. Like, you can't deny that. And it might capture a little bit more of that Star Wars big silver screen feel than what The Mandalorian does. It's just like a different flavor.
The volume serves a really important role for practical storytelling because it allows you to create environments that don't exist. Can you imagine how different the Obi-Anakin duel in Revenge of the Sith would look like if instead of shooting mostly on a green screen soundstage, they had a volume to shoot in? Because you have dynamic lighting on them. You'd have dynamic environment sets happening behind them. They wouldn't be like, imagine it, like, because there's a few moments where you can see, like, clearly someone off stage has shouted, hey, react to this thing, and they're both reacting slightly different eyeline-wise. But it's like, oh, no, you both are staring at the same thing now because it's happening in front of you. So, like, it has its purpose, but practical sets and, like, actually, like, oh, hey, we're building an Imperial, like, you know, like, transportation station. Let's just in and, like, redo an actual subway station that exists somewhere. To create a feel of it.
Yeah.
The gravitas that's real.
That was the difference from all the other shows in Andor, because with Andor, it was mostly shot like on set of where they built actual sets and everything. And I know they did that for Acolyte and some aspect too. So we're about to segue into that, because also at the end of The Phantom Menace, they like showed like this clip, which was super cool. Yeah. And then on May 4th, they were like, you know what? Here's a new trailer. And the like show's a month out, and I'm so excited. Mm-hmm. How excited are we all from a scale 1 to 10 about Acolyte?
I'm pumped, but like I'm forgetting that it's coming so soon, you know? Like Bad Batch just ended, and that was amazing. And then we just got Tales of the Empire, which we're going to talk about tonight. And that was amazing.
Yep.
And then we're going to get another new Star Wars show like right away, which is kind of crazy.
Right.
So the
clip at the end of Revenge of the Sith had me like jaw, or at the end of Phantom Menace had me drop jaw in the theater. Because I was like, okay, one, it's a practical, as far as we can tell. Two, like seeing the amount, like the diversity of practical and digital aliens on robots on screen and on stage. Yes. And then just watching the choreography.
Oh, yeah.
Like, granted, you know, it's you know, everyone's been commenting on Matrix vibes, which, you know, fair enough. But like the choreography alone is very much like, this is the high point of the Jedi being a thing. They exist. Yes. They're not just like, oh, that's oh, there's a Jedi. There's a Jedi around the corner, and someone's like killing them off. This album. Like someone's got to do that.
I'm excited because I'm finally almost at the end where I am caught up with everything in the High Republic era. So I'm on last book caught up. Yeah, because I've just been listening to Audible constantly.
I'm not done with the second book, and then I got distracted by The Living Force, and I've been listening to that.
Yeah. So yeah, no, there are so many great books out there. So I normally listen to them audible just because of not only is the narrator great, but they also add like the music and the sound effects and it's so good. So if you guys have the chance and you really do love these Star Wars novels, listen to them on audible because it really enhances the experience.
Star Wars audiobooks have a degree of like production quality that other audiobooks just don't have.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like I have every Halo novel on audiobook. I have every Obi-Wan book on audiobook, and just listening between the two of them, one of them has sound effects, one of them has music, one of them actually builds ambiance through other sounds, and the other one is just a person reading. And the Star Wars books are the ones that have the ambiance. It's crazy the production value of them.
Yeah, only the state can.
and weren't retconned constantly.
Well, it's just a matter of time. But all right, here we go. This, and we will break down the trailer real quick, and then we'll talk about our favorite stuff about Acolyte. All right. Here we, our favorite stuff about Tales of the Empire. Sorry. I'm excited. All right, here we go. So it's going to be a mystery of like, it sounds like there will be flashbacks and stuff, but we know this show takes place about 100 years before the events of the Phantom Menace.
Is it 100 or 200?
It's 100 because of the High Republic books take place 200 years.
Okay.
The Light of the Jedi takes place about 200 years, and then after that, with everything that happened in the books, continues. Jedi. But there are so many great, like, they have a stacked cast. Like, they have a really stacked cast. Mm-hmm. So this girl right here, and my wife actually just pointed this out to me, and I didn't even think to put two together, but the quotations, the assassin character, that's the actress who played Rue in the first Hunger Games game.
Oh, I mean, shoot.
In the movie.
Oh, that's a long time ago. Okay.
Yeah, that was so long ago. I can see it. Yeah.
I was like, my God, I did not. Yeah. So I was like, oh, cool. It's Rue. Like she's all grown up. Yep. And then, oh, man. Yeah. So. Oh. They showed, so the scene that we got at the end of The Phantom Menace is like, we see like a shortened version of that in the trailer, but basically they are trying to figure out who is going out and murdering Jedi. And then there's this, and we actually got like a first look of what the quotation Sith character looks like. Do you guys think from what we know about the High Republic, do we think it has anything to do with the Nihil at all, or do you think they are gone like at this point?
I am not caught up enough with the Nihil. So like, I know about the Nihil, but I haven't I'm not current with the High Republic, so I don't know if like they get wiped out in the High Republic or anything.
Well, I don't know either, and I'm near the last book, so I don't know either. Okay. So, yeah.
So, it could be.
Yeah.
I would think if it is anything, it's going to be the evolution of the Nihil into a connection with Plagueis.
Okay.
Because that's the next logical connection to Palpatine.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, and there is, because of their... We know the figure that we saw in the first trailer. The assassin is kind of walking up, and then like he's kind of standing towards he's standing in the distance, kind of looking at the ocean. We only see like the back of his head, but you know, in my mind, it was like, I would love it to be young Palpatine, but there's no way because this is way, way, way early for that. And we don't know if Darth Plagueis looks the exact same as he did in Legends. Like, they could just change the way, like, of a species, and he could be human. Like,
yeah, or we don't know. Something else.
Yeah, or it could be something else. No.
She was my student.
Yeah.
I trained her.
Yeah. Oh man, I'm just so excited for this because it's it's new Star Wars. Like, it's new. There's new aliens, new ships. It's a different timeline, so there's no way that we're gonna be like, oh, look, it's Anakin Skywalker or anything.
yeah.
I just love all the combat so much.
Yeah. And then here's this scene. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I also like, I hope there's like as few tie-ins to characters from the rest of the saga as possible. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm okay with there being a nod to Yoda. I'm okay with there being a nod to other characters that we know would have been alive around the time. But I don't want them to be focus characters. I want them to be peripheral at most.
Yeah.
Like ideally, if every shot of Yoda we see is, oh, there's Yoda in the background, but he's kind of fuzzy, that's great for me.
Yeah, I mean, I'd even be okay if Yoda had the same presence that he did in, say, like, episode one or something, where he's just kind of, like, there whenever the council needs to talk about something, like he's in the council chamber.
Yeah.
Like, and then he's not a main character, like you said. He's just kind of a supporting peripheral.
Yeah. I mean, I swear if we don't see Euro Poof or Oppo Rancisis, I'm going to be so mad. Because I want to see young Euro Poof of seeing him on the big screen of where it's this giant Q-tip.
Dude, and he's just, I could not stop looking at Euro Poof just being like, he's like,
there's a few shots where it looks like his neck disappeared.
Yes. No, it's so funny. And then I don't think until the Clone Wars that we knew that the Jedi Oppo Rancisis had like a weird snake body, because of like, I just see it now in the Phantom Menace, and he's just sitting in the chair, and then you see it in the Clone Wars where he's like kind of moving and he's slithering, and he's got like a long torso. So I'm just like, how are you fitting that in the chair? So I would love to see that. And
that's always been a thing, though. Hasbro released a figure in 2002 that had Oppo Rancisis with the snake body.
I love how you just have that now.
Sitting in my room right now.
There you go. There you go. Yeah. Because of these like Jedi that we saw in the Phantom Menace, just like, I would love to see him in action. I think the only time I've really seen Euro Poof in action besides like some of the old comics was the new Lego Star Wars game that came out a couple of years ago, and you can actually play him, and he like does like a front flip, and when he does, like, it looks like his head just kind of stays in the same like area when it's so weird, it's so goofy, it's so campy.
Body around that, like,
come on, man.
Don't forget about Robot Chicken either.
Oh my gosh, yes. Oh man, because of I'm gonna order for everyone, and then oh man, that's so funny, but. Going back to the trailer, I'm really curious of what, because it looks like there's like a different cult thing, and the scene right here is really interesting. So it looks like the Jedi are talking to this cult, and we don't know that much about of this society, but this Jedi gets black eyes and then he just drops. What do you think is happening here? Like, do you think it's some type of magic we've never seen before?
No idea.
It reminds me of, like, I don't know if this is just, I mean, it could be anything, but like, it reminds me of like in Supernatural, like whenever someone is possessed, like they can have black eyes. And like, I'm not saying what demons possessing him, like it could be magic or something else, but just that like overtaking of someone.
I was thinking kind of along the lines of the Night Sisters, because we know from Rebels when some of those Night Sister ghosts possess Kanan and Sabine, their eyes glow green.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm guessing it'd be something, because like one of the big things we got out of Ahsoka, the series, was that there is this whole other world of Force magic that we don't understand.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This could be tied to it, like... I get like weird Force magic vibes from it more so than I get like necessarily just straight Force powers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we actually get some interesting magic we've never seen before either in Tales of the Empire, because of you have the Mountain Night Sisters too, and you have the mother there that just teleports, and you just like, oh, okay. So there's definitely magic and different things that we haven't seen before. So, you know, I think Acolyte's going to be a great thing for that.
Yeah. I won't lie. I look at that kid too, and I'm like, that's just Percy Jackson as a Jedi.
I look at that kid, and I'm like, is that freaking Tom Baratheon from Game of Thrones?
Oh, yes. He totally looks like him.
I think it is him.
Is it really?
I think it might
hang
be.
On, hang on.
No. I'll look it up. Yeah. But anyway,
sorry. He looks a lot like Tommen, you know, before he jumps himself out of the King's Tower.
Wait. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I see it.
I think it's him. I think it might be. Yeah.
Let's see. Tip the
scales. Oh man. Yeah. And then we get this really cool, like, kind of like chase scene, and you're just like, what's going on here?
Right. And it looks like that's like like a ring of a planet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's going to be so many great things from the show. And it comes out in a couple of weeks here, because it comes out on June 4th.
At most.
Yeah.
Oh, it is
less
him.
Than a month now.
Oh, it is.
It is him.
I know Thomas. Those cheekbones.
Yeah. Yep, and then we get like our first look at the character, and he's got this weird Joker smile thing going on in his helmet, and it also reminds me of Kylo Ren's helmet too, like of the shape of it.
Yeah.
So it could be like a playoff masks that we hear get described in the books and the concept art.
Yeah.
Definitely. What are
you? Yeah. Yep, and that comes out on June 4th. They already did like a small breakdown of the trailer already, but I just wanted to talk about some of the highlights there because I'm really excited about it. But
I will say I'm hoping that it doesn't come out super late again, because we would be waking up at like 5:30. Well, I'd wake up at 5:20. To go watch Bad Batch with Hunter. Like, it's worth it, but it's also so exhausting.
Yeah. I think they actually said that they're doing the same thing that they did for Ahsoka, of where it would have a 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time release.
Please.
Yeah.
Please.
Was it 6 p.m. Eastern or 6 p.m. Pacific?
I think Pacific.
It was 9 Eastern.
Yeah,
it was 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific. I am very much look forward to hopefully being able to secure tickets to watch this at the LFL showcase again.
Nice.
Yeah. That'd be cool.
I normally get a warning on it for the garrison. So
right.
Fun. Yeah. So we're definitely excited for that. And then I guess let's quickly talk about Darth Jar Jar, because I know Hunter can't hold it. His
anymore. Yes.
Misa going to hurt
you. So a couple thoughts. Well, one about the series in general. There was a lot of talk about like that Lucasfilm turning Visions into something more like that Infinite series or whatever it was called for Marvel, whereas like, or What If, sorry, not Infinite.
What If?
Infinites was the old Star Wars comic where they did like, what if things were different? That's basically what this is. And I think that's going to be a really cool thing to explore in general in Star Wars. And me personally, I really like the goofy take that Lego always puts on stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it'll be fun. I think it's just going to be hilarious and fun because you're not going to take this series seriously. Or is it or is it a one-time thing?
It's a one-time thing. Here's the thing is like they have done a bunch of these since Disney Plus became a thing. They did like a holiday special one of where Rey goes back in time and then while that's happening, they're like planning like a Life Day thing on the Millennium Falcon. And this will always be canon to me. I don't care what anyone says, but Max Rebo shows up. And then, like he is doing his thing, and it's just like, oh my god, like this is great. And I was focusing more on that, but then you had three Obi-Wan Kenobis like all together at once, and you had like half a Darth Maul crawling across the sand, like just trying to fight everyone. So you're just like, you're right. Hunter's absolutely right. You like can't take these seriously.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
With this, I think it opens up the opportunity of a potential What If series, because there is a lot of, you know, what if Anakin never left Tatooine, what if they never went to Tatooine or something like that. And that could just reshape the entire galaxy. So that mm-hmm. definitely opens up the potential.
What if Qui-Gon survives the duel with Darth Maul?
Oh, okay. So, so it's a 4-piece animated special arriving September 13th. I don't know why I thought it was in December, but now we know. But yeah. Yeah. So I'm super excited about that. But, all right. Tales of the Empire. Did you guys have time to watch it on May 4th or did you guys watch it later? No.
Didn't watch it until that Sunday night.
Didn't get a chance to watch it until Monday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think last year on May 4th, I think we had Visions, Volume 2 that came. Yeah, because
I think so.
Yeah, so I like how they keep having stuff come out on May 4th because the year before that, I think we had Visions 1, and the year before that, we had Season 1 of the Bad Batch, and we had that big episode that dropped in. So
that was pretty
cool. Yeah, but with Tales of the Empire, I thought there was a lot of great things that added to the canon. I think it also explained why Morgan doesn't have the same face.
Yes.
Markings as well.
How do we want to talk about this, Colin? Do we want to like talk about it as chunks? So chunk for Morgan storyline.
Yes.
Because I was going to kind of jump into something about the face markings a little bit. Yeah. One of the most interesting things about that storyline to me, I loved getting some backstory on her because she just sort of showed up out of nowhere in The Mandalorian. But now there's a lot of justification for a lot of like where she is and why she thinks the way she does.
Mm-hmm.
But the most interesting add to the canon thing, like you said, or what you mentioned, Colin, I thought was the mountain tribe.
Yes.
More Night Sisters? Or are they just a specific group? But it sounds like they're different from the Night Sisters and they view things differently and stuff. And that was really, really interesting to me. Cool thing that they decided to add.
I really think that Morgan's story in Tales of the Empire was the stronger of the two arcs. And because I think Morgan, especially like when we first were introduced to her, she was just Morgan Elsbeth, the magistrate of that planet.
Yeah.
And then we learned that Morgan Elsbeth is supposed to be a Night Sister, but everyone's sort of like, but she doesn't look like a Night Sister. She doesn't like wears all the facial marks.
Yeah.
One marking on the forehead. Then we get get all this. Like we get all this now through Tales of the Empire, and it creates a much more established character.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So the thing in season 2 of The Mandalorian of when Morgan first showed up, I don't think they were really thinking if she was going to be a Night Sister just yet I didn't really get Night Sister vibes. I saw her like kind of robes and stuff and I thought of a tiny bit, but I didn't think that she was a Night Sister. Did you guys feel the same way of when she first made her appearance?
Put out a thing about it after that episode.
Oh, really? Okay.
I remember something too. Some interview where they at least heavily implied it. But I don't, even in Ahsoka, before we got to Peridia and stuff, and like it became clear that she was going after the Night Sisters because she was a Night Sister.
Yeah.
Like her behavior as a character, it was just kind of her being her, and it doesn't have to feel like she doesn't have to be making green glowing mist for her to be a Night Sister. Like she can still be kind of just doing her own thing, you know?
Right.
No, the other thing about that first episode was I guess I'm so used to seeing General Grievous like as I know he's not supposed to be like a goofy campy character, but sometimes you see him that way because it's just like it's Grievous, like he's just angry all the time and
he's
stuff.
He's just
but
a little this, guy.
Yeah, but in this he was kind of haunting. He was kind of scary.
That new animation model. So we only got to see it. Good. In the opening, I always call it a crawl sequence, even though it's not a crawl from the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
7. We only got to see it then. And everyone immediately picked up. They're like, whoa, that's a new model. That's sick. And now we finally got to see it in action. And you're right. He is kind of terrifying and haunting. He's his whole facial structure and everything on the animation model is a lot more intense and evil looking.
Yeah.
And then he was kind of he was doing some dark stuff and like his evil laugh and all that.
Yeah.
Like he just like his like appearance in, is this is just he just is hiding behind like a tree and then he comes up and he stabs a nice sister like in the chest and then he just starts laughing and he just starts cutting him down. And he also so he actually kills Morgan's mom. And he does it the same way that he did to Nadar Veb. I'm probably messing up his name from Layer of Grievous episode. Like he like almost does it in a very similar way. Except he doesn't lose his blaster. He just pulls out his, you know, his third lightsaber and you're just like, okay, all right.
So one thing I picked up on that I thought was really cool and to me added to the lore in The Mandalorian or even later in this series. Like Grievous just rips through the Night Sister blades with his lightsabers. And after that, because that's what Morgan remembers, that's why she gets a Beskar spear. And that like explanation as to why she would have one, it, not even like how she got it. That's super, super cool to me. And I think that was really cool that they gave that some meaning behind it.
Yeah.
I completely agree.
Yeah.
And just learning more about Dathomir was really, really cool to me because if we learn about the mountain tribe up there and it looks like they mainly use, you know, they do use magic, but they probably use more of the lie side of it more than what the Night Sisters down below, because it looked like they mainly focused on the dark side of the magic. And you can definitely tell the difference between the tribes. And I thought that that was really cool to dive into.
If I remember my Legends canon correctly, the Night Sisters of Dathomir definitely had multiple like sub clans within the overall like, you know, definition of what it was to be a Night Sister. And I remember originally like it's very similar to like what was, you know, the origin like in Legends of why the Jedi couldn't detect Grievous or couldn't detect Sidious is because they like the Jedi Temple on Coruscant is built on top of a Sith shrine. And I remember in Legends for the Night Sisters, it was very much similarly tied together to be the fact that the Night Sisters of Dathomir are like dark side or influenced because of the presence of a Sith shrine or temple to some extent on Dathomir. So I like that they kind of implied that, oh no, it's the ones in the valley that are the closest to this giant temple thing that are the most dark side-y. But the farther away you get, they have more like, you know, they're less aggressive. They're more about like, oh yeah, we still go out and we have like, you know, hunts and whatnot, but it is about nourishing the community. It's more about tying in and protecting the community versus aggressively expanding it.
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed. In general, I think this arc about Morgan, and I like we've only been talking about the first little bit about with the Night Sister stuff. I think it felt more thorough. Like we got to go into a bit more detail with stuff visually or otherwise than we did with the Barriss one, which I really like the Barriss storyline too.
Yeah.
But I think I agree with you, Christian, that the Morgan one definitely was the heavy hitter here.
Yeah. It was stronger too.
Yeah, definitely. And again, not to say that the Barriss one was bad. I thought it was a really cool story and a really cool arc for that character. But I think
I just didn't like the ending of it. No.
It spanned a wider change in her character.
Yeah.
And even though we got just as many segments, like talking of, or showing where she was at in various points in her journey, because it was a bigger swing in her character, it felt a little bit more abrupt when we did get to see those changes.
Yeah.
The Morgan story, just real quick for me to wrap up my thoughts on it. Like, we get her origin, we get how she meets Thrawn through being the actual designer of the TIE Defender, which explains why she's important to Thrawn in the later story we see. And then we get why, then we learn why, in the last part of Morgan's arc, why Ahsoka is there and why Bo-Katan knows Ahsoka is there. Because of basically the assassination and murder of a High Republic or a New Republic official.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
And like that was very clear. Oh, okay. Elevation of character.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah. No, I definitely love that. And then also just really quick, because I want to talk about it. We got the character Rook that we had in Legends, but we see him first on screen in Rebels. So the fact that he even, you know, made a small cameo, and this was super cool. I don't know if he spoke. I didn't see Warwick Davis's name in the credits or anything, but Warwick Davis did voice that character in Rebels in season 4. So
cool. Growls a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. But with everything that happened with the whole 3-episode thing with Barriss Offee's story, I loved it because we got her perspective from Order 66, you know, of where she's in the, you know, prison and she's watching it. But I want to talk about the animation, because seeing the just the art and everything was just mind blowing. Like, of getting the Inquisitor castle being built.
Yes.
That was just like, is this live action? Like, what's going on? And then there's one scene of where it's one of the Night Sisters and Barriss. They're kind of walking to that village. And when they're walking towards the actual village, it really does look like a live action shot. And it just shows you how far that, even from the Bad Batch, the animation has came.
Yeah,
bone armor was like different too. I know there's a lot to talk about. But
one scene specifically, I mentioned this to Hannah when we were watching it. I think it was when Morgan's looking down over the valley. She punches the dirt.
Yeah.
Like, her hands in the sand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That
was nuts.
I think they that crushed shot- it. And the one shot we got of Darth Vader sitting in the throne of the Inquisitor Fortress, those two shots stand out to me as the most jaw-dropping shots of the entire Tales of the Empire, because they were just so beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, no, I honestly, I really love these types of stories because it adds more to not just to those characters that we're more curious about, but it adds more lore to the entire universe. So I thought these shows are great. And I know that a bunch of us are waiting for, you know, Tales of the Bounty Hunters, Tales of Droids. I'm still waiting for that droid show that they announced all the way back in 2020.
Yeah.
Nothing happened of it. Even Anthony Daniels, like around that time, posted a picture of him in a motion capture suit and he was in some different country. We never heard about that again. So I don't know what's going on with that. I don't know if it's canceled project and they're not saying anything, but that's a disappointment because I want to learn about that. And I know, I know Hunter is probably very fascinated by it too, but it's just, oh man, there's so many other stories that like I'm really excited about to, you know, to actually watch and listen to eventually, you know, who knows what they're doing. Yeah. But yeah. Yeah, I mean, that is really it for this week. I mean, there again, it sounds like we all had a great May 4th, and we have Acolyte coming up. And I know next week all of us will be back for the Bad Batch, you know, series recap. And, you know, just try and not cry. If you do, just go ahead and bring your tissues. There's going to be a lot of emotions happening, especially with Josh, because he was not happy about Scorch at all. He was like, "Big Scorch died. That wasn't real Scorch. He died years ago." So we were just like, "Okay, yeah. But yeah." So no,
conspiracy theory, Josh. Now,
yeah,
yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah. But yeah, we want to give a shout out to all of our Patreon members. You can find us on every social media platform. Just type in at Star Wars Stuff Pod or at Star Wars Stuff Podcast. We would not be doing this if it wasn't for you guys. Is there anything you guys want to leave the audience with? Like, you know, any words of wisdom? Can't be about droids, Hunter. Has to be something different.
That's all I got.
All right. Well, from all of us from the Star Stuff Podcast, may the Force be with you always. Wow, I'm the only one that said it. It's fine. It's okay.